Whoa.
Sorry.
Whoa.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Well, welcome to Don't Go In There. I'm Sleepy Bill, and I'm joined, as always, by your hostess with the mostest, Ashley Ernie. And today we are going to re-record Jake Bird, a.k.a. the Tacoma Axe Killer. This is the episode where we had a little bit of audio problems, so we're going to give this another shot.
Yeah, so hopefully we don't have a Jake Bird hex, which we will get into in this audio recording, goes smoothly. So if it does, fingers crossed, check out our social media at Instagram, don't_go_in_there, Twitter at don't_go_in_there3, check out our Facebook page and group, Don't Go In There. And then email us your stories, your paranormal stories, true crime, anything you want to email us at don'tgointhere19@gmail.com. I will say I love that Anne plugged this every 10 minutes when you guys did your werewolf episode.
She thought she was so smooth.
She was. She really was.
Now let's not give her too much credit. Also, guys, don't forget to check us out on the Podbean Network and subscribe to us wherever you listen to your podcasts. This way you'll always be updated on our latest episodes. And Ash, did you see yesterday? We got our first Patreon.
Yay!
Aaliyah Cummings. Thank you so much. It means the world to us. She sent us a delightful email yesterday as well. So, you know, guys, if you can go over to Patreon, and if you can give anything, great. If not, no big deal. But if you would love to send us an email, we would love that too. We'd love to listen, hearing from our listeners just as much.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. We have three tiers that you can donate to at our Patreon. Each level has a different kind of reward. So Aaliyah is a badass armchair detective. She is getting a really cute little sticker from us. We'll be sending out this week. So Aaliyah, again, thank you so much. We super appreciate it. And she gave us a little email with super nice compliments and a nice compliment to Anne. So Dr. Debunk will have to come back.
I guess she's going to have to.
Yeah. So if you don't want to or can't support on Patreon, guys, like Bill was saying before, if you can give us a 5-star review or a comment on iTunes, it helps us climb the chart and gets more people to see us. So that would be awesome as well.
All right. Well, Ash, since that's the business side of things, what do you say? Let's go in there.
Let's go. So let's give credit where credit's due first. I like how you did that last time. So I use murderpedia.org, learning-history.com, roadsideamerica.com, and Ghost Adventures, because this is where I originally found this to research. So I do have some paranormal comments from the Ghost Adventure episode.
Sweet. Yeah, I just don't want to be labeled as a plagiarizer. So that's why I did that last time. So
I like it. And it's, I mean, this is, we are getting the information from other sources, so we do want to give him credit.
Yeah.
So who is Jake Bird? He was born December 14th, 1901 in Louisiana. He left home about age 19, but not too much is known about his younger years. Jake supported himself by doing manual labor jobs. He was a railroad grandee dancer. Did not know what that meant. I thought that was like a dancer on the railroad. I have no idea. It's actually a slang term for early railroad workers who laid and maintained the railroad tracks before machines did. So the more you know.
The more you know. I actually kind of fancy myself a grandy dancer. My moves at my wedding and your wedding kind of, you know.
I mean, we can post videos and let the viewers decide.
Well, you know, I think they're going to agree, so.
Yes, you are a very grandy dancer. So this job on the railroad had Jake Bird moving from place to place. And if we know anything about true crime and evil people is that when they have the opportunity to move place to place, they have the opportunity to commit crimes everywhere. less chance of them getting caught, especially in like the 1900s.
Yeah, especially when there wasn't, like, even though he was building the railroad, that portion of the railroad wasn't being used to, you know, transport people and goods yet because it hadn't been finished. So there wasn't, there probably wasn't a lot of people around in that area to even
know
we're gone.
Yeah, just like small little towns. So like we were saying, it came in very handy for Byrd's side habits, which unfortunately included stalking and murdering women in the town he visited. So kind of like Bill was saying, he tended to target on people who were, I don't know the best term to put it. They just weren't either, they were runaways or didn't have family, weren't high in society where people would immediately look for them, especially back in the day, like no social media. So it's like, you're missing for 5 days. A lot of people didn't think that was a big deal.
Yeah, I think
now it's a huge deal.
I've recently heard it called like the less dead, or as a lot of people know, people of high risk that live high risk lifestyles.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So Jake had an extensive criminal record ranging from burglary to attempted murder and has been incarcerated for 31 years in Michigan, Iowa, and Utah. So here's one of the, I mean, he's committed crimes everywhere, and we could be on a podcast for maybe 3 days talking about everything he did, but I'm going to bring up two very specific cases that kind of shape the way this is going. So in the late fall 1928, Byrd was in the Omaha area where he attacked this married couple. So Harold Stribling, he was 25, and his wife were attacked by an intruder around 3 a.m. at their Carter Lake home. Harold was beaten in the head with an axe. He suffered a skull fracture with a deep depression and was considered to be in extremely dangerous conditions. His wife suffered a blow to the face, resulting in a small fracture over her nasal bone, and the cut ran from her forehead all the way over to her left eye. Mrs. Stribling begged this intruder to spare the life of their 16-month-old, who was, you know, in the other room, and the intruder agreed, but forced Mrs. Stribling to walk about 3 miles out to the swamp outside East Omaha before releasing her at 6 a.m.
So weird to make her... Yeah, I'll spare your kid, but you're going to walk 3 miles into the swamp. It doesn't make any sense.
And I don't know what he was thinking. Like, maybe because it was fall, so maybe it was, like, super cold. She already had this injury to her face. Maybe she would come to, like, the elements, or I don't know what the swamps look like in Omaha. Like, when I think swamps, I think of, like, Florida, so, like, alligators and stuff. But what's out there? Like, maybe he was thinking some predator would eat her? I don't know.
I think we're going to ask Dr. Debunk, because that's where she went to her undergrad.
Now, that is true. Tell her to give us a little swamp detail. But, yeah, she had to walk 3 miles with a head injury, not knowing if her husband was alive at home, hoping her baby was okay. So she ended up walking back or getting found. So on Friday, November 23rd, Byrd was arrested and was immediately taken to the hospital where Mrs. Stribling was recovering. She recognized him immediately and said, "That's the man, take him away," before breaking down in hysterics. Byrd was then transferred to Lincoln, where he was placed in a prison cell. So insane, she was able to recognize him.
Which is kind of amazing in itself, because usually when you take a blow to the head like that, you're not going to remember everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's at least one good thing. And especially back then, there wasn't cameras or anything. So there wasn't even, like, if he walked down the street from their house or past a convenience store, there could have been, like, pictures taken of him. She literally was the only way they could prove it was him if she can identify him.
Yeah, and honestly, this is going to sound so terrible, but it's the 1900s. Racism is high in America. Byrd is an African-American. Ms. Stribling is a Caucasian. So I don't know how much more background they did except for take her word and throw him in jail.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. And
yeah.
So, I mean, you heard it all the time, especially, I mean, especially like in the late 1800s, you heard it all the time where a scandalous affair happened between a white and a black. And if she ever was found out, she just screamed rape and the town would, you know, would lynch that poor man just because she was found to have an affair and actually happened. So
in a freaking heartbeat, they would do like zero investigations.
Yeah, exactly.
So although Byrd would eventually be convicted and charged to a 30-year prison sentence for the attack on the Striblings, he was released on Christmas Eve in 1941, not paroled, released, for time served in good behavior, only serving 12 freaking years. So that's what drives me nuts. And this still happens, like, even today's, you know, someone commits this horrible crime, and then they get out on good behavior after serving, like, not even half their sentence. And it's like, what the fuck? They're going to do it again.
Well, you can see it's happening in New York. New York signed that big bail reform. And they're, I mean, it's not the same thing because people aren't getting released on good behavior. They're just not going to jail. And they're finding that their crime rates went up. And it's like, they're shocked. And I'm like, how are you shocked? You are letting people out of jail who are, and it's funny because the people getting released always have a prior record and then they commit it again. So it's like, how are you surprised? Are you that dumb? Or are you just that naive that you think that, oh, people make mistakes? People do make mistakes. And don't get me wrong, a lot of people that are in prison made one mistake.
Yeah, but, and there's people in prison who made that one mistake and they can be changed and they're never going to do it again. But
how can you, you're just risking the public by letting all these people go early because, oh, they've been good for 12 years in a prison cell.
That is dictated, mandatory, like your every move is, you know, they say what it is. So you have the bailer, the jailer has the control, not the prisoner. So now you give prisoner control of being out and free. What the fuck do you think they're going to do?
Yeah.
Anyways, I digress. But that's how I feel about him only serving 12 years for this horrendous crime of attempted murder. So on the morning... Wait, I lied. So the husband and wife, the Striblings, did survive their attack. And they tried to regain some sense of normalcy in their lives. In 1943, they moved from Omaha to California, where Harold worked for an insurance company. On the morning of February 11th, 1959, Mrs. Stribling called her doctor complaining of a headache and that she was unable to wake her husband from sleeping. The doctor called their neighbor, who entered the Stribling's home to find both Mr. and Mrs. Stribling unconscious. The police were notified, and the Striblings died soon after. So it appears that Mr. Stribling shot his wife in the head before turning the gun on himself. Which, is this the Jake Byrd hex because these two people did die after encountering him? Or was it because they had massive blows to the head by an axe and they had brain damage?
Well, and I think we talked a little bit about this on the episode we tried to record, but he took the blow to the front of the head, correct?
Correct.
So I do know that I'm not a doctor, so we're going to have to
wake up Ann.
Yeah. Well, you can go wake up Ann. I am not waking up Ann.
Nope.
The frontal lobe controls a lot of the emotions and a lot of, I want to say reasoning and stuff. I'm probably torturing this, but I kind of sound smart, so I'm going to keep on going with it. But we know by looking at a lot of those, like in the 60s, 50s, 40s, they had the insane asylums and they were doing those.
Like lobotomy things.
Lobotomies where they would disconnect the frontal lobe from the brain. And that would keep these quote unquote, I don't think this, but quote unquote crazy people that had emotional outbreaks. So they would get either very violent or very depressed. They would cut the frontal lobe off, cut the connection off, and they would just exist and wouldn't act right. So if you cutting it completely off makes you do that, if you have damage to it and it's still kind of connecting and you're losing some of that connection, you might not be able to process things correctly, and you probably will, you would become more violent because your reasoning is gone as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this was over a period of time, so it could have been just the trauma of it. But I definitely think it had something to do with him getting hit so deeply in that region that maybe he just snapped, basically just didn't. There was no reasoning for it.
Yeah, and we also see that a lot of, I mean, he's obviously not a serial killer. He shot his wife in the head and then committed suicide. But we do see that a lot of the serial killers that we cover in a lot of these podcast covers, they almost always have some kind of head injury, whether it's falling when they're a kid, or getting hit in the head, whatever. Excuse me. They seem to always have a head injury, and that is one of the big, what they call a serial killer's trident, I think is what they call it. You know, wetting the bed, brain injury, and I can't remember. I want to say like mutilating animals or something.
Yeah.
It's considered one of those big three characteristics.
Oh, so no. When you were talking about that, I was just thinking about Antonio Brown and how he is just legitimately off the rails right now. Mm-hmm. But I was watching Aaron Hernandez too, and a big thing with all those football players, because they get so many concussions and damage to their brain, is that over time they have these like outbursts, anger, because of, what is it called, like CTE?
Yeah.
And if it's not, I'm super sorry, but
no, it's called CTE, you're good.
Yeah. But that's what they're attributing it to, is brain damage. So if these football players who just get concussion after concussion, of course this guy who had an axe in his head is gonna probably have some symptoms down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. So okay, so that happened in 1959, but 10 years before, so 1949, Jake Bird is at it again. So October 30th, 1949, Jake Bird is now 45 years old. He broke into the house of Bertha Klute, K-L-U-D-T, and Beverly June Klute, and axed them both to death. Bertha was 52. She was found dead in her bedroom, and Beverly was 17, found dead in their kitchen. So around 2:30 a.m., the Tacoma police officers, Andrew P. Sabudis. And Evan Skip Davis were dispatched to the residence to investigate screaming coming from outside. So super lucky they were just in the area, I guess like patrolling or something. Because when they went in to investigate the screaming, they saw a man running out the back door and they began to chase him. Bird jumped over a few fences and finally stopped when he was cornered by a higher fence and the officers. Bird pulled out a jackknife and began to attack the officers, cutting Davis in the hand and stabbing Andrews in the shoulder. However, Andrew was a former prize fighter known as Tiny Lamar, and he was able to subdue Bird with a left hook to the jaw and a kick in the groin.
Oh, the kick in the groin. Super effective.
It's like a bow right on that. Like, I do love that. First off, he picked the fight with the wrong officers. Not that he had a choice on the officers, but he got a prize, you know, known fighter. And I love that his name was Tiny. Like, why do the fighters, like, go by Tiny when they're, like, 6'4"?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure he was a ginormous guy, because you don't name – you never name a little person Tiny. They don't necessarily like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sure he was a huge dude.
So, Detective Lieutenant Earl Comasio, first off, Detective Lieutenant is kind of like Major General. Like, every time I say it, I'm like, Detective Lieutenant. determined that an attempt had been made to sexually assault Bertha before she was murdered. So, just keep that in mind. That was just his, basically, assumption. Beverly, on hearing her mother scream, apparently dashed from the upstairs bedroom to the kitchen where she encountered Bird, and that's where she was murdered. Bird was captured and taken to the Tacoma City Jail, where he confessed to the killings. Bird said that he entered the residence by an unlocked door. So, guys, always lock your fucking doors, windows, everything. He brought the axe that he found from a nearby shed to bluff off anyone who tried to bother him, his words. He also removed his shoes when entering the home.
Because he's like, polite.
A polite burglar. Like, that's the weirdest thing to me. He snuck into Bertha's bedroom and stole $1.50, which in today's money is $15.99. So, big score. And took that from her purse. He returned to the kitchen. When he got into the kitchen, he had his back towards Bertha's room. And I guess he, like, sensed that she was there or felt, you know how you feel like someone's looking at you and mm-hmm. you turn around. So I guess he had something like that because he turned around to look at her and saw Bertha standing and staring at him. Bird told her that he only wanted the money and his shoes and that he would leave. But suddenly Beverly grabbed him from behind and began to struggle, which resulted in both of their deaths. Bird also said that he thought the police officers would shoot him, which is why he attacked them with a knife.
They should have. So, they should have shot him.
Yeah. Well, they caught him in the act, so yeah, just shoot him. But if they did, then they want to get this story saying kind of what did happen. I mean, there's no way to say if this is the truth, but at the end of the day, it has the same outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they should have asked, why'd you take your fucking shoes off? Like, important investigating questions.
They want to get the carpet muddy.
Maybe. Don't want to leave prints.
Yeah. I was actually just trying to be funny, but nah, look at that. I should be a lieutenant detective or detective lieutenant.
Detective
or maybe
lieutenant.
Even a deputy prosecutor. No, that's an actual thing. Never mind.
All of the above?
I am sleepy. So.
On Friday, October 31st, the deputy prosecutor charged Jake Bird with first-degree murder, but only in the death of Bertha. So, just a note, this was a customary, thing to do. They only filed one charge in multiple homicide cases. Just in case there was any failure to obtain a conviction on the first offense, this would allow them to go back and do additional filing murder charges. So, if the case on Bertha failed for whatever reason, they could go back and charge him with Beverly, and hopefully that would stick, and then he would get the conviction. So, I kind of like that they do it this way.
Yeah, and as we'll see what his sentencing was. So, you know, they're going to appeal it. So if they do appeal it and for some reason they win, so it's not even getting found not guilty or mistrial, they can file again. But if he gets found not guilty, he can't be charged for that crime because that's double jeopardy. Or if he appeals it and wins, well, then they can go back also and file the additional charges for the second murder.
Yeah. And, I mean, we see it today where it's like someone's in jail and they have life, and then they go back and they try him again for another murder. So even though they won, they still go back and do it, and they add on all these multiple life sentences. I think part of that's to ensure they won't get released from jail, because as we saw before, Bird got released on good behavior after 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think a lot of it brings closure to families who just want to see, their voice be heard.
Yeah, I think it's that, and I don't know if you've heard, but that I can't remember what state it was in, but the guy was serving life in prison, and he died for, 2 minutes, and they revived him, and now he's appealing that he served his life sentence. And he didn't have consecutive life sentences, so he only had the one. And now he's saying, hey, I served my life. I died. Now I get freed. So that's in court right now. So I do like the consecutive life sentences, so that can't happen.
That is actually super interesting, and I'd be interested to look into that because technically he's right.
Yeah, I would have to look up the state's definition of life. Because yeah, that's what you have to look. The criminal codes that we have, they all have definitions that you wouldn't think of. For one big one is like a DUI in Pennsylvania. It says, you're operating a vehicle under the influence. And a lot of people are like, well, that's a car. Well, no, a car is technically a motor vehicle. A vehicle in Pennsylvania is considered a bike, skateboard, I think even a horse, and something else. The only thing really not covered under that is like a motorized wheelchair where you have to be in that motorized wheelchair. If you're just taking out a motorized wheelchair just to have fun and get caught drinking, it's technically a DUI. So that's the weird thing about some laws is you got to know the definitions.
That's interesting. I would have never thought of that.
It's the more you know.
The more you know. So on November 26th, after a 3-day trial, the Pearson County jury convicted Bird to first-degree murder and recommended the death penalty. While on death row, Bird confessed to committing or being involved in at least 44 more murders during his travels across the country. On Saturday, December 6th, 1947, Judge Hodge sentenced Bird to be hung at the gallows at Washington State Penitentiary on January 16th, 1948. When Judge Hodge asked Bird to comment, he declared, "I was given no chance to defend myself. My own lawyers just asked you to hang me. They apologized for defending me. If they were so reluctant to defend me, why did they contest the prosecution proof of murder?" And Hal said that everything was blah, blah, blah. That's not what he said. "They apologized for defending me. If they were so reluctant to defend me, why did they contest the prosecution proof of murder and now said that everything is proven?" This was from the Tacoma News Tribune. At the end of Bird's 20-minute impassionate speech, Bird declared, "All you guys who have anything to do with my case are going to die before I do." That was from the Seattle Times. It became known as the Jake Bird Hex, and within a year after Bird was hung, all these five men died. So we'll get into the hex in a minute here, but just keep that in mind. So anyone who was involved in his trial. So it's kind of crazy. So while in prison, Bird confessed to killing around 44 more people. In addition to Washington State, he also claimed he murdered women in Florida, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan, Nebraska, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And he mostly preyed on Caucasian women, and he killed them with an axe or hatchet. So this dude got around.
Yes, he did. That's a long ways away around in a train.
I know. It's more states than I've been in. So on Thursday night, July 14th, 1949, Bird ate his last meal on death row. He then talked with his attorney for 2 hours. Later that night, he was moved to a holding cell near the gallows where he was shaved and dressed in new clothes. Just after midnight, Bird walked 10 feet from his cell to the gallows, accompanied by the warden, Tom Smith, and two prison guards. He said nothing to the 125 witnesses who gathered in the room, but muttered some comment to one of the guards. A volunteer prison chaplain started to read a note from Bird, declaring he bore no malice towards anyone and sought forgiveness. But before he finished, the trapdoor sprung open, dropping Bird 5 feet to his death. Bird was hanged at 12:20 a.m. on July 15th, 1949. His body was taken down 14 minutes later, and the prison physician and pronounced him dead, and he is now buried in an unmarked grave in the prison cemetery, only identified as convict number 21520. Bird willed his personal fortune of a whole $6.15, aka today's money, $65.58, to his appeal attorney. So it's probably just covering his fee. Maybe,
yeah. I don't That's, I guess he had no family, so.
No.
What else are you going to do? You're not going to, don't give it to the government. Give it to somebody. Give it to somebody else. That's my thoughts.
So why would they shave someone before they hang him? Is that weird? I thought that was weird.
I don't know. I've never hung anybody, so.
Oh. Well, anyone knows, email us. Because I was reading that and I was like, that is such a strange thing to waste time on, shaving somebody before they get hung. That's just the way my brain works, I guess, sometimes. So I find it kind of interesting that Byrd was not formally educated, but he was also known as a jailhouse lawyer. He often argued his own case before the courts. His knowledge of the law, together with the help of people against the death penalty, helped enable him to delay his execution for a year and a half. Byrd's case failed to capture the attention of national press, even though he confessed to committing or being involved in at least 44 murders throughout the country. But history marks him as one of the nation's most prolific serial killers, which I find interesting and strange because I've never heard of him until I watched The Ghost Adventures. But at the same time, there's no confirmation of him killing these 44 other people except for his word.
Yeah, and you see it all. You see it a lot where people, you know, confess, and they confess to so much more. I guess it's a game they play. You know, yeah, you might have caught me on these five, but there's 17 more, and thinking that you're gonna either A, stay their execution if they're sent to the death penalty, they can have some leverage on you, or to actually have you like kind of worry about something that's never happened. You know, they usually say like, yeah, they might give you like, yeah, there's 100 more names, but in reality, there's probably only, you know, maybe 10 more.
Yeah, they kind of inflate their numbers, but that does make a good point. It could, if we're so concerned about solving all these other 44 cases, they might not want to give him the death penalty yet, keep him around, see if he's going to talk. And that might have been either a way to, for him to maybe buy some more time.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like that there was people back in, you know, the 1900s, what was it, like 1949 or something, that were against the death penalty. And I know we go back and forth on this, but even people today, like freaking Kim Kardashian is working for people, trying to save people from the death penalty, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah, that is kind of interesting.
She's having I believe she's having an oxygen special. I don't know if it's special or serious. It's probably serious.
I think it's a series. I think I did hear that.
It's another freaking TV show for her. But at least it's something that I can get behind because I'm so sick of watching. It's like a guilty pleasure of nothing. At least if she's doing something productive. That sounds terrible.
Well, I know the last person that got behind one of the things she did was Ray J.
I hate you.
Cut it out. Oh, I'm terrible.
That was so bad. Anyways.
I am sleepy.
So we were talking about the Jake Byrd hex. So at the end of Jake's trial, he gave that speech and it ended with, "All you guys who had anything to do with my case are going to die before I do." Allegedly, five people connected with the trial died. So the first one was Judge Hodge. He conducted Byrd's trial and died unexpectedly of a heart attack 1 month after sentencing Byrd to death. Chief Deputy Clerk Ray Clark, who handled the filing for paper regarding the case, died. Joe Kerplach, Pearson County Under Sheriff, who obtained more than a dozen confessions to the axe slaying from Byrd, died of heart failure. Tacoma Police Lieutenant Sherman Loins, who also obtained confessions from Byrd, including the murder of Bertha and Beverly, died of a heart attack. And then J.W. Spalden, Byrd's 75-year-old lawyer, was found slumped over at his desk and died of a heart attack. So either this town is super, like, not heart healthy and eating, like, sticks of butter, and everyone's dying of heart attacks, or they all got the Jake Byrd hex and died of random causes, and they died before he did.
Well, he wasn't wrong, that's for sure. I hope it's done. I hope this hex is done, though. You know, I know he's dead, so hopefully it's done because I don't want to die.
But how evil do you have to be to have this power to hex people? Like, not only just these five, but like the two people he attempted to murder before. So that's kind of putting his count at like seven.
Right? Fucking fucking crazy dude.
Yeah. So the reason why I wanted to cover Jake Bird is because he was held in the Skrull cage jail. So this is kind of a little true crime and paranormal. So I do have a little paranormal stuff to talk to you guys about. But I wanted to talk to you about this jail first because it's very unique. It's very interesting. Council Bluffs was like a lawless place in the 1800s where this jail is. But taxpayers of Pottawa County refused to pay for conventional expensive jails. Instead, they used technology, which offered a cheaper solution, and it's basically like a human rotary that they could staff this jail with only one guard with one gun. So this jail could hold, I don't know, like 20 prisoners, but you have one guard, one gun.
And I always wonder, like, first of all, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And of course, to put it up to a bunch of people that work for the government to come up with something so fucking stupid. But in the long, like, did it actually save them money? Because that, you know, that's what it was for. Because, oh, now we only have to pay one guard with a gun. Oh, yeah, that saved you money. But what about all the money that you dumped into this stupid ass design and then building it? Like,
and then, I don't think it did.
What's that? Yeah, I don't think
it did. I don't think it did at all.
Yeah, it probably somebody, you know, knew a guy that knew how to make these jails, and it happens all the time, people. Somebody's pockets got lined, and that's why they decided to do it.
For sure. And I mean, this wasn't the only one. There was a handful of them made, but this was one of the bigger ones, but it was.
Oh, and I'm sure somebody saw it at some different city and was like, oh, yeah, we need that.
Yeah.
You know, and thinking that they're smart and they're not and they're dumb and it's stupid.
It okay, is. I'm, so it is. And we'll get into how stupid it is. So it was known as the Skrull Cage Jail because the city had a population of black squirrels. So they named it after the squirrels. It sat on a giant metal drum set, and it was stacked with three floors, and the rooms were pie-shaped, so they were triangle-shaped, and it was housed inside, like, the building was steel-lined walls, so there was only one door, one jailer, one crank to spin the cells around to let prisoners in and out. So it's a big cylinder. Just imagine a cylinder rotating. Unfortunately, like Bill was going on a rant about, this idea of a jail with these turntable gears, they kept jamming. It was pretty much judged a failure from the beginning. That was from a local newspaper in 1887. And that was only 2 years after it opened. So did not last very long.
Great decision.
Yes. So there was only 18 rotary jails that were built during this previous, like, heyday of squirrel jails, but this one, like I said, was one of the biggest one. A pop-up said the internet was unstable.
Yeah, it was.
So the squirrel, okay. So the issue with the squirrel jail was that the drum weighed 45 tons. And it balanced on a 3-foot square base that kept shifting in unstable soil. So the top of the cage, which was suspended from a single iron beam, had an emergency hatch. And one desperate prisoner did try to climb up and discover that it led nowhere. They had to wake the jailer. He had to come down, get him back in his cell. So there was no good design for this at all. There was no good... I mean, even if you think about it, what if there was a fire? They're all going to die. There's no way you could rotate this thing. If the things keep jamming, they can't rotate it. People don't eat for days. They don't drink for days. Like, it's just a terrible design.
The government design.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm done.
So, so aside from the horribly... you know, the horrible rotating drum and the risk of starvation and it jamming for too long. Another issue was that it had no ability to segregate prisoners from, you know, a prostitute from a chicken thief to a rapist to a kill bad check for $1.50. But he was housed next to Jake Bird, the axe killer who killed 50 people. Like, they were neighbors. So there was nothing separating them besides, like, their jail wall. So it's not like there was, solidarity. What is it called? Where you're by yourself in jail. You're the police officer here.
I don't work in a jail. It's not confinement. Solidarity confinement.
Yes. Thank you. I don't know why that was not coming to me at all. But another thing is, since it's rotated, prisoners would often stick out. I don't know if they would, some of them would do it on purpose, some wouldn't, but they would get their arms and legs broken from them either accidentally or deliberately sticking their limbs through the bars, and then the cage would rotate, which would break their arms and legs, so they would need medical attention. So I don't know if they did it to go out or because they were just going crazy from being in these cells. One prisoner, Willie Brown, did kill himself. He tried eating glass and had to get medically transferred, so they had to rotate the cage to get him out. But other prisoners would tie rope to the outside, like the part that would rotate. Mm-hmm. And then when it would rotate, they would slowly hang themselves. So
that is fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's if like I couldn't
just
even.
Go back. Just go, hold on 1 second. This only fit 18 people.
No, there's 18 of them made.
Oh, okay. I was like, how is this saving any money if it's only holding 18 people? Okay. Never mind.
I don't know how many.
And rant.
Let's Google real quick. I don't know if it ever said how many people it held.
Yeah, I was just thinking, if it only holds 18 people, there's no way in hell this is worth the money. It's not worth the money even if it holds 100 people, but still.
All right, well, I'm looking at the Panama Squirrel Cage Jail website, and it does not say how many cells are there. Yep. I know it's three levels, though.
Oh, it's three levels? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. So think about, like, cutting a pie. There's, like, I don't know, like, 10 pieces, right? If you do, like, a pie cutter.
Yeah.
So maybe like, 30 or under. That's a guesstimation.
That's probably a good guesstimation.
So in 1969, the jail was declared unfit for human rehabilitation, and inmates were moved to other prisons. However, the Historical Society members stood in front of bulldozers to prevent the Squirrel Cage jail from being demolished. If one good thing can be said about citizens of Pottawa County is that their cheapness preserved the jail just long enough for it to be recognized as something worth saving. I don't really know if I agree, but okay. Today, the Squirrel House Jail is open for tours, paranormal investigations, and overnight fundraisers that are lock-ins. It's also said that Jake Bird still haunts the prison. So I can probably bet that the prison now is making more money than it was when it was a prison.
Oh, yeah. This is probably the only reason it had any benefit.
Oh, for sure. And it's like now if you want to go try to do a paranormal investigation, and you can go there and try to see Jake Bird. So
I don't think I'm actually that far from Council Bluffs anyway.
If you're not and it's a driving thing, you need to wait till I come out and then we can go.
I will look this up.
But speaking of paranormal, so I did want to touch on some of the paranormal things that have been known to happen in the jail. So I got all of this from watching The Ghost Adventures. So watch it. It's really good. We all know my fondness for Zach. So first off, there's a creepy...
You want to say fondness, that's fine.
It's a fondness. First off, there is a creepy mannequin in Jake Bird's cell. Mannequins in places are never okay. Like, we need to move past this, everybody. Wax Museum is not okay. Like, even in freaking Gettysburg, there's mannequins everywhere. They're terrifying. Like, that might just be right up there with my fear of Steely McBeam. Like, I don't like it.
FYI, we are not close. It's still a 14-hour drive for me. I thought it was in Wyoming. It's in Iowa.
Oh, yeah. So the Ghost Adventure crew picked up some EMF spikes in Jake Bird's cell using a geophone EMF detector. The spikes started randomly and then just stopped. So sensing that a presence was there and then it was removed. There's also a jailer's apartment above the Squirrel House jail. So the jailer would have to, they would have to live somewhere. They have to still be in the jail. So they lived in this apartment. It was reported to be so creepy that the jailer did not want to live there. He heard footsteps and he heard noises, so he basically moved his family out. He did not want to live there anymore. So, you okay? You good now?
Sorry, my laptop was dying. I was trying to do that on mute. Hopefully you didn't catch any of me.
It was on mute then. Okay. Well, I was talking, so did I get picked up?
Yeah, you were fine. I muted my own self.
Okay.
This is great. This is great podcasting work right now. This,
FYI. It is. Yeah. It is. So keep in mind the jailer's apartment. So there was an eyewitness in the jailer's apartment that was sitting in a rocking chair, which rocking chairs, again, are always so freaking creepy. Get rid of them. He said hello. He was sitting in the chair. He said hello three times. And on the third time, a book flew from the bookshelf and landed on the floor. Needless to say, this eyewitness took off out of that room. He said he still has a reoccurring nightmare sitting in that chair and seeing the book fly off the shelf. And when it crashes to the floor, he like jolts awake. There was another eyewitness who was installing a security camera that faces Jake Bird's room, and he felt these steel steps in the floor vibrate. And these are heavy, old-fashioned steel steps and floors. Like, they should not be moving. Like, even if a big-ass truck drives by, like, they should not be moving. And he said the whole thing was vibrating, so he got out. Like, he ran out the door. There's also a music box that plays in the jailer's apartment on its own. And when they were saying that, I started cracking up because I remembered the paranormal episode we recorded, and I think it was Slenderman, and the ice cream truck came outside. We just heard faint music, mm-hmm. and it scared the shit out of us.
Oh, yeah, so, I remember that. That's funny.
So, guys, go back and listen to that episode, because that was creepy on its own. So, the jailer's apartment also has a secret room the staff discovered. They didn't really say what this room was used for. But the Ghost Hunter crew did do an EVP session that captured the following EVPs. One question was, is anyone here? And the answer was, search the house. The question was, do you know Jake Bird? And the answer was, yeah. And then a question was, is he here? And the answer was, he's hiding. And then there was evil laughter. So it was like, search the house because he's hiding. And then laughing. So that was creepy in itself. They also did an EVP session in Jake Bird's cell, capturing the following words, come attack me, you got it, when asked if Jake Bird was his name, and then get back. And all these three things, come at me, you got it, get back, were all in a deep male southern voice. Jake Bird was an older male from Louisiana. Could it be him? Maybe.
Ooh.
Maybe. They also captured a lot of light anomalies and black masses. So it is safe to say that the Squirrel House jail is truly haunted, and at least one of the residents or prisoners that are still there is Jake Bird. Kind of give you a full spectrum of everything. A
little bit of everything.
Just a taste.
That's what we do.
So, guys, if you like this episode, if you're creeped out by this episode, if you have any thoughts, comments, anything, check out the social media, Instagram, don't_go_in_there. Twitter is don't_go_in_there3. Check out our Facebook page and group, don't_go_in_there. And then, guys, like I said, email us anything you want, your true crime stories, your paranormal stories, your hometowns, your thoughts, your comments for us at don'tgointhere19@gmail.com.
Yeah, and I actually just had a thought. If we ever get enough emails where, you know, your own personal experiences, either, you know, you knew a serial killer or you had your own paranormal experiences, if we ever get enough, maybe we can do an episode, Ash, where we just have emails from our listeners and we can, you know, tell their story. I think that'd be a pretty cool episode to do from the listeners.
Oh, absolutely.
Also, one more thing. Anne's definitely right. I can't do the Instagram thing. The don't_. I can't do it. So don't leave me anymore because I can't do that.
That's okay. And if I ever have to leave again, we'll I know Dr. Debunk Anne can do it.
Yeah.
He's really good at it.
Also, guys, don't forget to check us out on Podbean. Subscribe to us. And if you can, leave us a review. You know, we would like a 5-star review, but, you know, leave us whatever you think. Obviously, that's on iTunes. I think I just said that. And, you know, keep following us and subscribe to us wherever else you listen to us. That way you're always updated on new episodes from your favorite podcast. That would be us. And, you know, those comments and reviews really do help, guys. That gets us up higher on the list, especially on iTunes, so we can bring this to other people that can join us on all of our fun adventures.
Yes. And guys, like we said before in the beginning, we have a Patreon. We would love for you to check it out and donate if you can and want to. We have 3 different levels to support us. We truly do appreciate the support. It helps us to keep recording new episodes for you guys. So we want you to be involved. We want to hear your thoughts. And if you can, support us in that way too.
Absolutely. So I guess that is that for this week. We'll be back next week, so stay tuned. And if you subscribed, you won't even have to worry about it. You'll just get a little notification. So Ash, if you have anything else?
Nope, that's it for this week.
All right. Well, until next week, guys, remember, don't go in there.